tell you when the government's going to be open. I can tell you it's not going to be open until we have a wall, a fence, whatever they'd like to call it. I'll call it whatever they want.
All right. The president digging in his heels. Day number 5 of the government shutdown. That a whole lot more to talk about with our buddy, Landyap Extraordinaire. This year, I'm doubling, tripling down my efforts here to make sure he wins favorite columnist and the nappies. I'm going to rededicate myself in 2019 to that. Also, with Breitbart and Yellowhammer News, our buddy Jeff Poor joining us now. Hey, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Hey, good to have you here, and lots to do here. Let's first of all start off with the president and the shutdown. If he couldn't get it done with Republicans in control of the House, what chance does he have of getting it done now?
Yeah, so I think it's probably about the same. The holdup right now is the Senate and getting the 60 votes, which doesn't look like that's in the cards no matter what happens. He has to have some Democrats start to cave. So my guess is if, it's going to take the same kind of idea with Schumer caving, and if it goes into the new Congress, the chances that Schumer cave is probably about the same as Pelosi caving. But really, we're kind of waiting them out here and seeing what happens in the court of public opinion. Last time, if you recall, the last shutdown, the Democrats took the blame and they wound up giving in. I don't know that that's the case this time, but it doesn't seem clear to me that it's necessarily going to be all on the Republicans either. It just depends on who wins this battle of public opinion. And coming out of Christmas, we'll see. I think things have really kind of been at ease because of Christmas. So really, it's hard to really get an idea of where this is going to go, at least from the view of the public.
Well, you're pointing out there the facts of the matter on the shutdown, but the more important thing in Washington are the optics of it. And you don't have, like you said, an email to us, no countdown clock, no stories of hardship going on right now, that's used as a leverage point politically. Once again, there's the real story of what goes on, and then there's the political story of what goes on. So you think, because that hasn't been ramped up, whether it's because of the holiday or, attention elsewhere, does that make this go on longer because there's not the pressure yet?
Yeah, I do think it makes it go on longer. The thing I've kind of noticed today, watching some of the early morning shows, it's more about Donald Trump's fitness. That this shows that he's not a fit leader, that allowing this shutdown and not playing the game of Washington properly, that and kind of paired up with the whole Mattis thing just shows that he's not a fit leader. We usually have these government shutdowns, it's somebody not able to get into a national park, mm-hmm. or somebody not getting a check and making it hard to make ends meet or something to that effect. So it's a little different this time. It feels a little different in early going. Now, which way that curve goes in the court of public opinion and how fast, I think will show us how fast either side will come to the table. If it doesn't, if it just kind of goes straight and people continue to kind of go to their battle stations, I kind of wonder it might be prolonged.
Yeah, and I want to get an idea of what you think that looks like. But first, that number. If there's a negotiation, right? So we said the president had said $5 billion. The Democrats had said $1.3 billion. And like you've pointed out, that's a rounding error in the farm bill, the amount. Although I'm still not fired up about us spending money we do not have as a nation. But if you're the Democrats and you see this as a win, would you even move off? I mean, this is just straight strategy. This is not punditry here, y'all. Would you move off $1.3 billion? What motivation do you have? I mean, I know you said the court of public opinion, but heck, we're so galvanized anymore that people that support President Trump are going to say, good thing. Shut it down. Let's get this thing done. Let's get it done right. People that are supporting the Democrats, there's nothing Trump can do that they're going to say that's a good decision. So what motivation? Why would anybody do anything here? Why would the Democrats even move off that $1.3 billion number?
Well, I mean, it's the same with the DACA thing the last go around when they shut down the government over the Dreamers. Somebody's going to lose, somebody's going to win. Now, things remain stagnant. If Democrats cheer their side and Republicans, they really cheer Trump, it's just going to become a matter of wills, I think. And then maybe that third wheel will come along and say, hey, guys, let's get the government back open. This is ridiculous or whatever. And that, and you'll start seeing more, you know, activity for people that aren't necessarily engaged in this and don't really have a side. But, you know, that hasn't really shown itself in anything since Trump's been president. It's really been very polarized. So I think it's just if either side sees this as a win, if they both see it as a win, then nothing's going to happen. I think that's the inconvenient truth.
All right. And what does this, when you say it could go on a while, what does that mean? Is that I know you don't know, but your gut sense, is this a month? Is this less than a month? Is it more than a month? What's your vibe on this?
Well, later this week, the Senate's supposed to be back in session. I would really kind of watch and see what it's really more about the Senate calendar. If the Senate comes back into session and you see a lot of activity up there and you see some buzz, I see senators giving press conferences, that means the wheels are sort of in motion and things could happen. It's really going to take some Democrats coming to the table, and you always said it's. You know, you still got these other parts like Bob Corker and Jeff Flake until the new Senate is sworn in. So that being said, I think that's just kind of like what you need to watch for. Like, if the Senate isn't even going to bother, if they go back into recess or go home or whatever, then it's a lost cause. There's no point. That means that we're probably going to be sitting around a while. So that's in the interim. Now, once we get to the new Congress, yeah, start all over. So that's a whole different thing, and that would take probably at least, who knows, but maybe a week, just based on parliamentary procedure, giving everybody a chance to debate, a 2-minute speech, and all these things you do that are part of the protocol in passing these bills for a new Congress.
Jeff, I would love your hot take on your thoughts on how do you think other countries are looking at us as we are dealing with a partial shutdown on top of all the different changes that are happening, which we have to include. It happens with every administration. Okay, so let's put that out there. But with the changes on top of this partial shutdown, how are we being viewed by other countries right now?
I think we're probably not very well, but I don't think we were to begin with. There's always been sort of a blight associated with Trump internationally, be it Europe or Latin America or wherever. I think he does well in Asia, but this stuff certainly doesn't help anything, but doesn't make it any worse or any better. It's probably just par for the course in the views of the international sort of community, but, you know, there's how much are they paying attention to what's going on in the United States? I think that's probably a bigger question.
Can you hold on over the break and come back with us?
Absolutely.
All right, coming back more with Jeff Poore, because now we're going to talk about the other story too, the markets and, you know, President's tweets directed at the Fed. Is that what's causing the volatility in the market? Is it time for that correction? How big of a correction? Talk about that and a whole lot more. And Mnuchin got on the phone Monday and called the banks. How'd that work out? Yep. At 820 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Reminder, 2018 Alabamian of the Year voting continues. Cut the list in half, and we're working down to one person, thing, entity, critter. The high stepping turkeys are doing quite well in the voting, and you can vote right now. We are in round two on our website at fmtalk1065.com.
Yeah, we began round two voting today, and that will go through the weekend, and then we'll be down to the final eight, and we'll have the Alabamian of the Year at the very beginning of next week.
Okay, and y'all say hello again to our buddy Jeff Poore. And Jeff, I gotta tell you, I'm gonna get a little of your personal life out there, because I'm jealous that I should have thought about something like this. This would have been a heck of a Christmas gift for members of my family. You and your lovely wife are going into the city, New York City, to do what tonight?
Well, it's just me. She's still back in Nashville.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to check out the To Kill a Mockingbird production on Broadway tonight.
Pretty strong.
Hopefully write kind of a review for Yellowhammer about it. This is kind of a quick trip just to check it out and you know, since it's the hot ticket right now on Broadway.
Yes.
I think if you want tickets, you got to wait. The best time they say to wait is until April. So that's on the docket for this evening.
All right. Well, yeah, be looking for that review over at yellowhammernews.com. Now let's talk about a subject I focus on a lot on the midday show because I'm very interested in it. Not because I'm any kind of, you know, soothsayer. I'm just a sideline fan at this point. What's going on in the markets? You have the president getting, you know, talking bad about the Fed and Jerome Powell. You have Mnuchin maybe on the hot seat now because he recommends Powell. Then you have Mnuchin on, Monday getting on the phone, calling the banks, seeing if they could, free up some money here. What the heck is going on, and what does this mean for the market?
I mean, it's my understanding what Mnuchin did is kind of standard operating procedure for a Treasury Secretary. Just, say, hey, you know,
this has happened before. This has happened before.
Yeah. Don't tighten up. Things are going to be okay. Because whenever there's a panic like this or whenever there's a market slide, you don't want it to, you know, to grow into a panic. So I think that was just part of it because, you know, the market's just correcting itself. That's one thing, but there's a credit crisis, and that's causing the market to slide, and there's a fear that credit won't be available. Then that's a whole different thing. I think that was sort of where Mnuchin was going with it. The problem was, of course, it gets out in the press, and, you know, investors are generally flighty as it is, so I think that's just kind of where it is. If it comes back a little because of this, I wouldn't be surprised, but I do think there's a lot of other things going on in the market that are, you know, to have some people concerned. We're way off the highs, obviously, but the interest rates, I think the Fed's kind of backing away from another hike next year. That was probably what a lot of people want to hear. So there's a lot of things that could happen between now and then. I think probably a lot of this we're seeing is triggered by the government shutdown. That just it's sort of a vote of confidence that the government can't get its, you know, its act together, then how does that bode for the rest of the government? How does that bode for a lot of other things going on in the market, a lot of the commerce that goes on? And that's just, you know, where we are. I think it was probably overdue, but I think the big part of this was really triggered by the government shutdown.
Yeah, it's funny how much the market talks out of both sides of its mouth, because the market will tell you, I will sign on to this, I want the least amount of government interference in the market possible. I want them out of our business. We need to do the business of business in a free market. At the second time, I do agree with what you're saying. There's probably many on Wall Street going, well, this government shutdown, what could this mean? Guys, you got to either have it one way or the other. You know, it's out of both sides of their mouth.
There's a degree of uncertainty, and government shutdowns always breed this uncertainty. So I think that's where that's coming from. It's not so much that the government's involved. If investors knew kind of what the government was going to do, then, you wouldn't have this sort of sell-off real quick like that, especially on Christmas Eve, which is usually sort of a benign day on Wall Street.
Now, you write in this email, you would argue this right now from the economy is the most pivotal moment of the Trump, or one of the most pivotal moments of the Trump presidency. Explain that.
So, we talk about Russia, Mueller, and all this. I think that's sort of background noise. I wonder, like, what do people care about, really vote for, that aren't just already committed to one side or the other? The economy goes south and tanks. I think that raises a lot of eyebrows. I think that gets a lot of people concerned. And, you know, as we know, people vote their pocketbooks. So if this market sell-off slides into some sort of economic recession or any, even if the growth numbers start to go down and the economy contracts, then I don't think it's good for Trump. I think all this other stuff is, you know, just small potatoes compared to the economy and making sure the economy remains healthy at least through the 2020 election if he wants to, if he hopes to be reelected.
Yeah, I just wonder if, let's say the economy is not what it is now, it goes south by 2020, do you think Trump voted, the people that voted Trump, those that showed up to vote in the Rust Belt and other places to put him over the top, do they then switch that vote back to a Democrat, or do they just not go to the polls?
Well, I think they don't show up. I don't think they're going to necessarily, you know, switch to Democrat. But remember, Trump really, really won on the margins.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he won in some places he wasn't supposed to. So it took the, you know, everything lining up properly for him to win. So I would look at it that way. Like, if he just, you know, what does he need? What did he promise? And all these other things. And I think the economy was one of the bigger promises. You know, obviously the wall and some of the, you know, actual stuff hasn't really come to be yet. But the economy seems to be doing well. I think the midterms would have been much worse for Trump if the economy had soured at any point in time, given we were told it was going to sour with the Trump presidency, but it didn't. They picked up seats in the Senate, obviously they lost the House. But, you know, traditionally, midterms for Republican or for presidents coming, you know, out of their first term are much, you know, much worse. So for Trump, the economy really is sort of the linchpin keeping it all together. And this is really, I think, how he handles this. If he could get it back on track, whatever that might be, that's what he needs to do if he's really looking to make a comeback in 2020.
Talk to us about the departure of Mattis and the departure of the U.S. troops from Syria. You say this is the reaction is very curious.
Yeah, the reaction is it seems to be, well, we lived in this sort of, I don't know, the last 15 years or so where war was always bad, no matter what. It's, you know, especially start with the Trump administration. I mean, the Bush administration. After 9/11, we went into Iraq. A lot of things, no weapons of mass destruction were found, and then we got, you know, you start seeing people like Ron Paul really kind of pick up steam about getting mixed up in these foreign entanglements, and the media sort of really, you know, clawed back at it. They became kind of the non-interventionist, that became the worldview, the popular worldview at the time, that we don't need troops in all these places. That's how people like Rachel Maddow came to be. That's how the 2006 midterms, and we, you would just take it for granted that whenever we bring troops home, that was going to be a positive.
Mm-hmm.
But not this time. It doesn't seem that it, you know, and I think this is, it's pretty profound just to see the reaction to what Trump has done. It's not, yay, we're bringing troops home for Christmas. It's, oh my gosh, what has he done? He's bringing these troops home from Syria. It's going to fall back into the hands of ISIS or whatever. Are you know, you have a lot of people, a lot of these usual people saying that, and it seems to be catching on. So to me, that's kind of a curious reaction. I didn't expect them to really, anybody to really change their mind about Trump over it, but to act as if this was some kind of big time national security blunder, I think is not totally wasn't expected.
All right, just a minute left, but you can you give us a little history lesson? You said Trump Mattis seems almost Truman MacArthur ish. Walk us through that.
So, if you recall, Truman relieved MacArthur of his command when he started kind of doubting the commander in chief about how he should handle China. And, you know, this was, you know, the whole Korea War blew up and all that. And he relieved him of his command. Well, at the time, MacArthur was very popular. He was very popular with the public, especially, and Congress loved him. I think that's sort of, you know, this is much smaller scale than that, but this is kind of reminds me of that. When you have now Mattis isn't a general, Mattis is the Secretary of Defense, but he comes from that same sort of that background. He wasn't that long ago that he wasn't a general. And I think, you know, you have a commander-in-chief and a top military brass sort of butting heads. That's sort of what this is reminiscent of.
All right. Jeff, remind folks whether they want to talk more about this or see your review of To Kill a Mockingbird on Broadway. Where do they go?
It's twitter.com/Jeff_poor.
All right. Belated Merry Christmas and early Happy New Year to you.
All right, well, thank you for having me on.
All right, Jeff Poor, check it in, and we'll check in with you at 343-0106, 343-0106. Comments on any of those subjects, we'll get those from you. Text line, phone line, same number. Ben says it's only because Trump is pulling the troops home. We'll find out more about what he thinks on that when we return. 9:35, FM Talk 106.5, and Mobile Mornings on this day after Christmas. How was your Christmas? Get a little review of your Christmas. You can hit us up at 343-0106, 343-0106. A couple things we'll talk about. The markets going forward is just the correction that was waiting to happen. How big of a correction we look at. Also, this situation with the troops out of Syria. I got to tell you, when Jeff paints the picture of the people that he'll call non-interventionist, and that's what a lot of folks on neocon side call that, you can paint me with that brush a little bit. And I kept up, I think, pretty solidly on that from Bush to Obama and now to Trump. And Trump is doing what he said he would. Like, so many times there's the howls of outrage. President Trump is doing what candidate Trump said he was going to do. Now, he hasn't, some things he hasn't accomplished, but he's attempting. Better yet, he's attempting to do things he said on the campaign trail. So anybody acting like they're surprised and shocked. Right. He said that in that vibe, I don't want everybody to forget, the idea of bringing troops home and limiting, it's not only the Syria thing. There's also a move now to talk about bringing some big percentage of troops back from Afghanistan. Those were popular on the campaign trail. They were very popular on the campaign trail. And for all of a sudden now, people are like, what is he doing? He said he was going to do this. I guess we've gotten so used to people that run for office not doing anything that they said they were going to do. He said he would do this. People cheered it then. What's changed now?
I think the difference is the way in which he did it, that it was announced on social media as opposed to going through the necessary channels and having his generals and the Secretary of Defense and those who have been picked and appointed to their positions to be a part of the approach. I think that's what the difference is.
It's clerical or semantic, but not in core of what it does.
But I mean, the presidents in years past, they don't make decisions of ending a war or bringing troops home without checking with the appropriate people. And so, whether you're for or against it, there are rules and regulations in place. Especially if you're in the military, they go on command. And so, if your commander in chief, says something, you're going to follow those orders. But with that being said, you have generals in place and you have people in place who have been doing this for so many years and have made a career out of it. And when you don't turn to them for their direction, those on the other side are going to say, "Well, great move, but why did you make that when you work with these people and for these people?"
But he is the boss of all of them.
But you have to. But if you've been in the military, you understand. You could be the boss as the whomever,
commander in chief.
Right. But at the same time, you have these people who have all of this experience in the military. They've been there for years for a reason, and you turn to them for their direction before you make a decision. If they're caught in the dark, if they're caught off guard, mm-hmm. and they have to read about this on a Twitter, that's not the way that business is handled at that level.
But also, I don't think that he just woke up one morning and decided to pull the troops out of Syria. If I remember correctly, I think at the beginning of this year, he told Mattis to start making plans, a 6-month or an 8-month mm-hmm. plan to start withdrawing the troops before this news came out. But what I think is interesting, and I'm no security expert, Middle East expert, or anything, but Trump was talking about this in the campaign, but there have been so many people against us having troops in the Middle East, and it seems like now those mm-hmm. same people are upset that we're taking them out solely because it's Trump's decision to pull the troops out.
And all I'm saying is anybody acting surprised by this shouldn't, because he said he was going to do this. I mean, I'm somebody who looks at this and points out, number one, don't be surprised. He told you he's going to do this. But number two, I'm fairly non-interventionist, as I've been painted in the past, except for the, when Mattis talks about our allies, the Kurds, and y'all know I got a soft place in my heart for the Kurds because they're hard as nails, and I think that is our best. A Kurdistan, just side note, a Kurdistan and a new country and a Kurdistan being a member of NATO and let Turkey go, I believe in it. The Kurds as a group, I think we should be so lucky to have more allies like them. But this kind of leaves them, not kind of, this leaves them out in the cold on this mm-hmm. with this move. But once again, it is what President Trump said he was going to do when he was candidate Trump. All right, go to the phones, 343-0106. And first up, Clifford in Mobile. Merry Christmas, a day belated.
Yes, sir. Merry Christmas. Good morning, Ms. Kelly and Sean, you guys.
Good morning. Merry Dalton. Christmas.
Yeah. The general, now, this is just my thinking. These people seem to be trying, they're getting away from Trump maybe for a real decision. because it seems like to me they're not going to end up a good place when they're on Trump's side.
Well, I believe Mattis, that is genuine. His disagreement with the president, and he does it actually the way you would expect somebody like Mattis. He doesn't sit in the position and say he disagrees. He goes ahead and resigns from the position and then says it like you would expect a military person of all those years to do. So I think Mattis, I don't know what's in his heart, but I'm going to tell you my best guess, Clifford. I completely believe he 100% believes that we are abandoning allies in the region, promises that have been made. I mean, if anybody's going to be for using the U.S. military to achieve some goal, it's going to be somebody who's been in command of putting those troops there. So he knows things at a level and has relationships that none of us will ever have. So I believe it comes from his heart. You know, I don't think it's just a political strategy for Mattis. It may be for other people. I may agree with you there that are jumping ship, but I don't think in Mattis's case I can agree with that.
These guys have been over there, Sean, for years. Actually, there's no way these people are going to stop fighting each other. No way.
Right.
These people are born.
Oh, you don't have to, Clifford. You don't have to convince me. Like I said, I'm the guy they call the non-interventionist. I like to have regional players do the work instead of our men and women. But I'm just trying to explain what I think Mattis is doing, and the fact that I don't think people should be surprised that Trump made that move because he said he would make that move.
But these are hard decisions. Even the decision with this border wall, the fact that these kids are coming to that wall, God bless their souls, and are dying at that wall, it's because they're not being properly diagnosing these things because they're coming in so many and so fast, but that wall is pretty much stopping them from bringing the diseases over here and giving it to other people. When they're dying over there, man, that's a shame. But they don't have time to properly diagnose what's wrong with these kids. They think it's the flu, but it's not the flu. It could be anything. It's not the border people's fault.
Right. You too, Clifford. What a good open-minded view of that. I tend to agree with you. I mean, it's heartbreaking, those stories. At a certain point, though, you know what? Let's say there's thousands of people that are sick on the border. I mean, who is it? The responsibility of some of the border agent? I don't know that you can put that on them. Let's go to Freddie in Mobile next. Hey, Freddie.
Yes. Good morning, and a happy New Year to you and Kelly. Well, I like
and don't,
to tell
and
you
don't, and I'm here.
I called you last week, and one of the listeners complimented me on my call, so I thought I'd call you again.
Good.
Charles Cross Hamilton is pushing a book his dad had written, and that book is not complimentary to the conservatives in America because they say they're losing their way by following Donald Trump.
Whose book?
He's putting the blame on Donald Trump.
Whose book?
You mentioned earlier that he's doing what he told the people, but the majority of the people did not vote for the president to be president, so he's not really doing what the people said. He's doing
the people that voted for him. When a candidate says something, doesn't matter. I mean, they said they're going to do the thing, and they do the thing. What percentage of the people that voted for him, does that change what he said?
Freddie? Come up and get on that high horse. You build a wall, we file a country. They're not coming at that wall. They're coming through your air to get you. They're not worried about that wall. The wall is not going to stop planes, bullets, shells, and anything. The wall is to stop human beings. And we got enough space here for everybody to want to come, Sean.
So you think we should have borders or not?
Well, I'm just saying we got enough space in this country to take care of some of the people who want to get here.
So, once again, should we have a border? Should we have a border that has a line there? Whether there's a fence there, there's checkpoints at the crossings, or should we not have a border?
Yeah, we can set up a situation on the border without extending a metal concrete structure 1,000 miles. You got the Great Wall of China. No one want to go there. Then, so the wall is there. If you got a country where people that can see a better life for themselves, we should be able to offer it to them.
Okay, and at what cost per? And you know, who knows where I stand on this, but for fun of devil's advocacy here, at what percentage of an individual taxpayer should we finance people coming in from another country? What should it be, a certain dollar amount or percentage out of everybody working in the United States?
We don't need the individual. We got corporations that can put money in the.
You mean private companies that would be forced to finance this?
Yeah, but we make Google, Facebook, anybody can set money aside if somebody needs some assistance, whether you live here or wherever you get here, you get it. And I'm telling you, we got the money's all over out there. It's not going to hurt your pocket and my pocket if they come here.
It's not. So Google and Facebook will finance the refugees into the country.
Amazon, the president wanted to send the postal system out to Amazon. All of these major corporations can set aside enough of their earnings to do anything they want to do with it, Sean.
So do they do that because they choose to do it, or do they do it because there's a government like mandate that says X percentage of yearly profits go into the refugee fund?
Now, I'm trying to tell you, it doesn't have to come from you and I.
I'm asking you how you get the private companies in your world here you're describing. How do you get the private companies to do it? Do they do it of their own volition, or do they do it because there's some sort of mandate from the federal government that says they have to?
They do it for the well-being of the country. They do it because they got the money to do it with. They can do it, Sean.
Isn't their job to return the most profit they can to the shareholders of those corporations?
But the shareholders not going to be hurt by it.
They will if there's a reduction in profit.
They're not getting the biggest of the revenue. The share, if you participate in the country, you're not getting the biggest piece of the pie. You're getting some money for your investment for being there.
But if I buy stock in those companies, isn't the deal that when they make profits, that's returned to the shareholders?
And say some for some need. You can all give it all the money away.
So the idea here is, you know what would happen to those stocks if all of a sudden they said, we're going to take X percentage of our annual profits and use it to fund border efforts? There's going to be another stock, another company that doesn't, that's going to be a much better vehicle for your investment.
If your corporation would say, I'm going to set 1% of what I'm earning to do that, it wouldn't hurt it.
This is sliding scale. It's not much to ask. I appreciate the call, Freddie, and Happy New Year to you as well. Grab a couple more calls on the backside here at 343-0106, 343-0106. Also, take your text calls, text messages, and phone calls. That's what I was trying to say. Be right back. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. By the way, Midday Mobile today, guest hosting the show, Cam Marston, is going to be in for me at noon today for Midday Mobile. A reminder, too, if you didn't catch it on Monday, that's fine. It was Christmas Eve, kind of weird schedule. Debut of the Mike Gallagher Show. Got to hear him yesterday as well, coming and going, and be back on today in just about 9 minutes. Well, a little over that because we've got the news. So about 14 minutes from right now, Mike Gallagher Show here at FM Talk 106.5. More information through our website on that. Or if you just have any kind of questions, drop me a line on the text line or the email, and I'll try to get those answered. All right, let's go to Michael in Mobile first up. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how you guys doing this morning?
Doing good.
Good morning.
Okay, so I just jumped in the truck, and I heard part of what the guy was saying, and I heard what you were saying. So I work for a Fortune 500 company, and we give a lot of money. And, you know, we have stock, you know, Wall Street and everything, but we give a lot of money to different charities. Now, the caveat is it has to be a 501c3, and most Fortune 500 companies want to give to the county that they are in.
Smart.
And not really way out, you know, outside of those boundaries. But we do. We still give outside of those boundaries. But it has to be a 501c3, number one. You know, because I heard you talk about, you know, stockholders don't want their money going to this and that. They don't mind. I mean, if it's a 501c3, it's going to be a tax write-off.
Right. Right, but there has to be some number, right? So, I mean, he's talking about 1% of all earnings. And it's a danger for, you know, you got one company that does whatever. Michael, y'all are making widgets, and then I've got this other company, we make widgets too. And your return on the stock is less because y'all might have beaten us in that quarter or whatever, but y'all are giving this amount away. I can buy this other stock, makes these widgets. It's performing a little bit better because that's all coming back to the investor. And once again, people say corporations, evil corporations. Corporations have a job. People say all they want to do is make profits. That's why they exist. I mean, that is why corporations.
Yeah, that's true. But most Fortune 500 companies, you know, most of them are multi-$1 million and even $1 billion companies. They do feel the need to give back. They're going to always give back.
Sure.
To the community they're in. And they're going to always give to different groups. I mean, we had even if they ask the employees to give, even we give.
That's a great thing. You have an option, right?
Salaries to different charities just to help out. Then the charities are of our choosing. They don't tell us which charity to give.
Cool.
So
I think that's great.
We encourage giving.
And you know what? I think that is a great thing. Encouraging people to be charitable, take care of their fellow human beings, I think that's a great thing. Like, I'm never against that. But when you try to say, you know, here's how we're going to finance all this issue on the border, we're going to have the corporations, well, maybe they decide to do it, but Freddie's acting like there'd be some sort of federal mandate to require them to do it.
Let me say this. I didn't know what the conversation, I heard the back end of it about what you said about corporations are not going to give because of the bottom line and making money for the stockholders. And what you said was correct, but we do still give.
There
and
we go.
I just wanted to make that statement. So
I appreciate it.
Have a good day.
Hey, Happy New Year.
You too.
It's 343-0106, 343-0106. A ton of text. I don't have time to get through all these. Let's see. Yeah, a lot of people asking about Freddie refusing to answer the question about open borders. I mean, it's a fair question. People will see that as some sort of political slam, but that is if I'm going to have a debate with you, and see, I use the term debate or discussion, not argument, and that's what Freddie and I were having. There was no, y'all hear this? Y'all listen to that, Washington? There was no impugning of the other one's character. We can impugn the other one's ideas all day long. That's what's fun about debate. Your job is in that ring to put your idea against the other idea and let them, like, what is it, the battle bot thing? Let them battle it out to find the word. That's what's great. But I have to, what I'm doing there and asking about open borders is I'm trying to understand what the parameters of what he believes in. Because if
that's
I don't
fair.
Know.
That's fair.
If I don't know, then you can shift and, you know, like the old, not that I've ever done that before, but if you don't, you go, oh wait, I'm getting beaten up on this, let me shift in this part of my idea. So that's, you know, that's what that was about, is trying to find where Freddie stood on that. And then his idea is coming out with these companies giving the money. Once again we have an issue on the border, and you have an issue of osmosis, and nobody likes to hear this, but I've said it before. So what happens in osmosis? You move, you know, you cross borders, porous borders are crossed to even out in science, right? You have hot and cold, you have wet and dry, unless you have hydrophilic or fabrics. And let's not get into Gore-Tex here, but if you have a membrane and you have a wet and a dry, they ain't both equal out being moist, right? If you have hot and cold, mm-hmm. you have a porous membrane, they both become warm. In other words, in nature, in science, everything with a porous border will even out. So conceivably with a land border, if you did not regulate that, the migration of people into the United States would only stop when the standard of living and the job opportunity on both sides of the border were equal. And that would either be having things in Mexico get better, or Central America, these people, having those things get better to be a point where there's no reason to leave your home and come to the United States. Or the scary thing is to have situation come down, standard of living in the United States come down because of this, to a point where it equals and there's no reason to cross the border because it's no better over there. It's osmosis. And I think it can be true in politics and human beings as well.
But I like, and the beauty of the show is we get to hear your opinion, and then we get the real-time feedback. And I think what you said during the commercial break is powerful. It's First of all, you're a big boy. You can handle your own, okay?
Yeah, people come to my defense. Don't worry about me. I'm good.
Yeah, but like you said, I mean, how boring. Now, I love vanilla ice cream, right? But when it comes to a discussion, when it comes to our country and our families, our government, you don't want vanilla. You want that diversity in the conversation. And so the fact that you open the mic and you talk to people, if nothing else, you're getting our listeners thinking. Just really thinking, because it's easy for us to all remain in our own tunnel of thought. But if you can be that voice of reason and just make both sides hear you, that's the point of this part of the show. I mean, you know, your voice, it really does matter, especially during the 8 to 9 o'clock hour.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's the obvious. I just get to say it.
We'll see if how that works out there. If you look at my attempt over starting on Monday to try to add some balance to a tweet about family Christmas pictures for presidents of past, instead of bringing everybody, I brought some people together, and then I just let both sides now. They're battling it out on my Twitter feed, which is boring. I want to look at market information. All right, Mike Gallagher Show on the way next. Y'all have a great one.
You too.